The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com and kidspiritonline.com. Our first article today from KidSpiritOnline.com, Behind the Iron Curtain. This article was written by Fatima Shafi on March 3rd. 20th century Romania is a dark corner of the world, where electricity is unpredictable, water may or may not be poisoned, and the dreaded Securitate prowls the streets in search of radicalism to weed out from the concrete. I Must Betray You, author Ruta Sepetys, Philomel Books, 2022, pages 336, ratings 4 stars. The people's voices are muffled, their pleas for help cut short. Even if they could speak freely, global superpowers across the sea are too far away to hear them and too preoccupied to care. Whispers of revolution are firewood for the regime, which is always hungry for more dissidents to punish. One by one, communism is relinquishing its hold on Romania's neighboring countries. But Nicolae Ceaușescu's dictatorship, slippery as a chameleon, persists in all its authoritarian glory. Romania chokes in the Iron Curtain's grip. Husbands, wives, sisters, and brothers cannot be trusted. After the global inflation, courtesy of the Cold War, foreign cigarettes have more value than blood. How many Kents will I need to make sure they turn up the gas? This is the world Ruta Sepetys gives her readers a harrowing view of in her novel, I Must Betray You. Written from the perspective of 17-year-old Christian Florescu, I Must Betray You is a poignant twist on the coming-of-age genre, wherein Christian comes of age in an impending revolution and finds himself on the front lines. Under the mentorship of his grandfather, he learns to morph his fear and anger into a vision of what Romania once was and what it could be again, a Romania he's never really seen but longs to live in. A country in which his sister can purchase tampons instead of resorting to old cotton or cheesecloth, and bananas are not a rarity. But he can't let his epiphanies show. The small apartment he shares with his family, one of a myriad in Bucharest, is undoubtedly bugged, and privacy is a luxury one must stand in queues for. He must navigate through the rivers of trust, love, and betrayal, lest he drown in them, like so many desolate Romanians have. He is hesitant to place himself at the forefront and expose himself to the layers of espionage and betrayal within his own community, but also eager to do so, itching to contribute to a cause greater than himself. Regardless of what his desires, though, national insurgency brings with it a sense of immediacy, urgency, and inescapability that Christian cannot ignore. Rather, it finds him in his own home. I hoped proximity might bring clarity. In a time and place where literature is considered inherently revolutionary and thus condemnable, it becomes for Christian a source of catharsis. His diary, that he keeps in English, is a damnable portrayal of the hidden face of totalitarianism, which the outside world cannot or will not see. Sepetys acutely conveys the loneliness, confusion, and rage of a student under the regime. What the reader must acknowledge in Sepetti's writing style is that she doesn't overdo it. The 17-year-old protagonist has the same dreams, desires, and epiphanies as any other 17-year-old in his situation would. He is not wise beyond his years or blessed with spectacular fortitude. This makes the book highly relatable, as it expounds upon the power of the students and literateurs in molding their world. Simultaneously, Sepetti's also manages to convey the slow pace at which these changes take place. So slow, in fact, that it's hard to see the events unfolding before your eyes until the result becomes visceral. Her ending initially seems disjointed from the rest of the story, almost unsatisfactory. But the reader then realizes the point she is making. Ultimately, the results of resistance may not be seen immediately, maybe not even in one's lifetime, but they will appear, immortalized, and bound to the heartland. Not all problems will be resolved together, nor will all truths be unearthed in sequence, because the forges of revolution don't just burn away tyranny. They also, inevitably, steal from their benefactors. There are no happy endings. There is just the contentment that comes with a fulfillment of purpose. Sepetti says all this in Christian's words. Christian's reality is encapsulated in the title. It is betrayal that urges him on, disillusions him from the realities of his world, and teaches him valuable lessons that contribute to his resistance. But the pivotal moment in his development as the protagonist is when he is coerced into a role he has always abhorred. One thing that becomes clear to him is that he can trust no one, not even himself. The demarcation between those in power and those subjugated by it is clear, be it through the color of their cars or the brand of cigarettes they use. There are also those who toe the line, alternating between power and subjugation. They are the informants, and they are everywhere. They may even be in his household. Throughout the course of the story, he realizes that he doesn't really know his family. His every interaction with them is eclipsed by the omnipresence of the regime. Even his secrets are not his own. And none are unimportant to the Securitate. None are beyond utilization. Christian's story is set in a situation that has become all too familiar to the global audience. The novel recalls Ballard's Neo-Malthusian Millennium, or even modern-day Gaza. This link is particularly profound, considering recent international events and the propaganda surrounding them, because Ceausescu's regime was characterized by propaganda and self-victimization. Sepetti's carefully hints at the disinterest of world leaders and their eagerness to believe Ceausescu's sugared assurances are an important reason for the propagation of Romania's abysmal situation. This book will be particularly enjoyable for teenagers between the ages of 14 and 18 when they have been exposed to enough of the modern world to understand the political forces that shape or disrupt it. I gave it a rating of 4 out of 5. I Must Betray You embodies how feeble fear-induced loyalty is. Its formidable facade disguises a flickering shadow. The story symbolizes a powerful, inevitable truth that keeps reiterating itself. Genocide is too big a sin for its perpetrators to be forgiven, and those who were indifferent will also not be spared under history's scrutinizing eye. The global community may forget, but a motherland wet with indigenous blood never will. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com, A Beginner's Guide to Romanticizing Life. This article was written by Arisha Ahmed on March 16th. Life in the 21st century is so fast-paced that it borders on frenzied. We're constantly rushing from one thing to the next, with barely enough room to draw breath in between. It's therefore crucial to remember to take the time and effort to actively focus on enjoying life. A low-effort and effective way to do this is by romanticizing life. Romanticizing life is a phenomenon that has become increasingly popular in recent years, unsurprisingly so. After all, we've all watched and wanted to be in the same Hallmark romance films. You know the ones where the protagonist awakens to sunlight and birdsong spilling into their room and goes downstairs to a breakfast of fluffy waffles and fresh fruit. Unfortunately, this isn't realistic for everyone, given it requires a fair amount of money and perfectly timed sunshine and birdsong that not everyone can access. But don't let this dishearten you. There are still many ways of romanticizing your life that doesn't require a ton of money and effort. Here are some recommendations on how to make your life that little bit brighter. Enjoy the small things as much as the big things. Try to take pleasure in all the good things that come your way, no matter how small. It's easy to forget the pleasure of everyday things like a cup of coffee in the morning or a beautiful sunset just because of how used to them we are. Getting into the habit of noticing these small everyday things will make you more grateful and help you squeeze as much joy out of your life as possible. Have things to look forward to. Sometimes we all need that extra boost of motivation to get through the week. Having things in your schedule to look forward to offers that very boost. It can be as little as a milkshake on a Friday after school, or something bigger, like going to a theme park with friends. The most important thing is that it's something that gives you pleasure. Use this as the opportunity to get signed up for that dance or pottery class you've always wanted to join. You'll both get to try out a new activity and have something to regularly look forward to every week. It's a win-win. Treat yourself. While it may not be practical to treat yourself every day, it's still important to occasionally indulge in the odd treat. There doesn't have to be some big special reason. You could simply be having a down day, or feel that you haven't done anything nice for yourself in a while. Consider making a Pinterest wish list, or even just a list in a notepad. When you think you're due for a treat, you can consult your list and pick something out that you've wanted for a while. Use your nice things. While this tip sounds easy in theory, in reality, it can be hard to do. We all have that one candle or body cream that we're saving for the perfect moment. But let's face it, that perfect moment is never going to actually arrive. There will always be some reason to prolong waiting, and you'll end up never actually using it. So use it now. It doesn't matter if it's a random Tuesday in the middle of the school week. Just using your nice items automatically turns an otherwise ordinary day into a special one. Create playlists. Themed playlists are another simple pleasure in life. They're both fun to make and enjoyable to listen to. You could make a playlist for autumn mornings to school filled with spooky songs, or a playlist for when you go on runs jammed with your action movie music. Listening to custom playlists will have you feeling like the main character from your favorite rom-com movie. Spend more time outdoors. I admit, this one makes me sound like a middle-aged mother barking at her child to get off their phone. But it has to be said, spending less time on technology will, more often than not, improve your outlook on life. Numerous studies have shown that being outside significantly improves people's happiness and energy levels. So go for a walk in the woods, or even just your local high street, and soak in the benefits of being in the fresh air. Use this as a chance to listen to one of your newly made playlists. Be mindful. This is one of the most popular pieces of advice on how to feel better in life for a reason. Being mindful is a simple activity that can have a large positive effect on your life. A core part of being mindful is remaining in the present. Pay attention to your surroundings and ensure your breathing is deep and slow. There are many tutorials on YouTube on how to be mindful, ranging from the short to the long. Positive affirmations. Positive affirmations are phrases meant to encourage positive thinking. A nice way to engage with positive affirmations is by writing them out on slips of paper and sticking them around the house where you know you'll see them daily. There are no specific rules as to what your affirmations should say. The important thing is that they consist of phrases or words that increase your motivation and confidence in life. If you need ideas, Pinterest is filled with affirmations for you to take inspiration from. Hopefully, this article has provided you with some ideas on how to romanticize and improve your quality of life. It's your choice how to go about following the suggestion. You could wade in slowly and just try one, or jump in the deep end and attempt a few at once. The important thing is experimenting and finding what works best to help make your life as romanticized and yourself as content as possible. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com, How to Find Your Thing in High School. This article was written by Anna B. on April 1st. Somehow, over the past 5 years, my hobbies and projects and the things I'm curious about have led me to one thing, starting an Etsy shop. And not just that. Starting an Etsy shop turned into hosting a podcast, which turned into speaking at small business events, which turned into giving friends advice about starting their own shops. And as a girl who watches Shark Tank fairly regularly and sold homemade pot holders door to door as a third grader, it's not entirely surprising. Though I would not have expected the business etiquette you need to learn for things like email, invoicing, and general professionalism. Feel like you haven't quite found your thing yet? Let's talk about it. Try everything. Well, maybe not everything. I've never played tennis, and I somehow know I would be embarrassingly horrible at it. But trying out for the school play showed me that I could enjoy public speaking and acting with a lot of practice. Saying yes to being a school tour guide gave me much confidence when talking with adults. Being the student tech assistant, or whatever they called it, for school-wide assembly slideshows showed me that I was not that into learning about tech. Is there a business club at your school? A place where you can try digital art? What about playing an instrument? Have you tried cooking or baking? Is there somewhere you've thought about volunteering or interning? Now is the time to try things. It's much easier to play at a piano recital when you are 15 or 16 and feel like you're not very good at it than it would be when you're out of college, looking at the 12-year-olds playing Beethoven and thinking to yourself, if only I would have tried this earlier, maybe I could plunk out more than a few eighth notes by now. Take the opportunities to practice. There's always an excuse to practice something. Want to be a better public speaker? Offer to lead the presentation for the group project. Want to get into digital art? Sure, you can practice independently, but you could also design a friend's birthday party invitations or a club t-shirt. There always seems to be someone hosting a t-shirt design contest. I've always admired the chalkboard art at restaurants and ice cream shops. It's absolutely beautiful. I learned cursive in high school and got a book about modern calligraphy 4 years ago as a gift and thought I might be able to learn how to do chalkboard art. If the people designing and creating the signs at Trader Joe's can do it, so could I, right? One day when my family and I were eating at a small restaurant in Iowa, I saw my chance. One of the chalkboards had an outdated specials menu, and I asked our server if I could design it. I've been practicing chalkboard art, and I was wondering if I could design your specials board. If you don't like it, you can always erase it. Assuming I was an art student, she asked her manager, who brought me a basket of sidewalk chalk and one white liquid chalk marker. Perfect. The board wasn't amazing, but it was better than before. They even offered me a brownie after everything was done. Many times we think that we need to be professional before we offer to do something or put ourselves out there for a job. However, most of the time, the best way to learn and improve is by doing. Here's another example. I've always wanted to work at a coffee shop. I'm not the friendliest, bubbliest person. But when I got the job opening at the local coffee place, I picked it up quickly. By listening to the other people and what they were chatting about with the customers, I could do the same thing, putting my own spin on it. Explore a different type of summer job. Lifeguarding, working at a retail shop, or working in food service are all popular jobs for teens. Try all of them. Beyond that, are there other types of work you'd think you'd enjoy? Business owners are often willing to let someone else run social media management. If you're on top of the trends and have an interest in creating content, why not? Usually, it helps if you have a relationship with the owner to ask them personally for an internship. Think of your family's hairstylist or a massage therapist, photographers you know, artists or creatives you meet at farmers markets, your music teacher, podcasts you listen to, your school or sibling's school, your city's youth clubs or similar groups. Maybe it's not social media management, but something else for you. It could be investing extra time into your art, creating YouTube videos. It only feels cringy until you're successful. Or taking online coding classes. Or you could try playing live music at local restaurants. It's easy to think, I'm not talented at any one thing. I don't have any skills that are good enough yet. Remember, right now is the best time to try something new. Anyone who has tried anything new has felt the same way you do. It might take a few iterations for something to click, and that's okay. Here are some journal questions to think about. What sorts of things do I see and admire? Am I detail-oriented or a big-picture thinker? Am I more creative or motivated by crossing items off a to-do list? What things are fun for me to do? What's something I could do for hours and not get tired? You have so much time to find your thing, and there's probably not just one of them. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Billie Eilish calls out biggest artists for wasteful vinyl album variants. This article was written by Teen Vogue staff. Billie Eilish wants to reduce the impact her career has on the planet, according to her new interview with Billboard. The Oscar winner opened up about her personal sustainability initiatives, namely, how she produces vinyl. Her last album, Happier Than Ever, was made with recycled vinyl and sugarcane shrink wrap. For those not in the know, most vinyl releases use single-use plastic shrink wrap that doesn't biodegrade and virgin vinyl, which is a plastic resin, aka fossil fuels. We live in this day and age where, for some reason, it's very important to some artists to make all sorts of different vinyl and packaging, which ups the sales and ups the numbers and gets them more money, she told the outlet. She may have been referring to several other artists like Taylor Swift, Harry Styles, Olivia Rodrigo, and so many more who have released multiple versions of their albums on vinyl in the last decade. I can't even express to you how wasteful it is, Eilish went on. It is right in front of our faces, and people are just getting away with it left and right. And I find it really frustrating as somebody who really goes out of my way to be sustainable and do the best that I can and try to involve everybody in my team in being sustainable. And then it's some of the biggest artists in the world making effing 40 different vinyl packages that have a different unique thing just to get you to keep buying more. It's so wasteful. And it's irritating to me that we're still at a point where you care that much about your numbers and you care that much about making money. And it's all your favorite artists doing that stuff. And they do make a lot of money. According to a 2021 New York Times report, 17 million vinyl records sold in the United States that year, generating $467 million in retail revenue. It's not just the production of vinyl that's an issue, of course. It's also how it's discarded. Because it's petroleum, when it ends up in a landfill, it's there forever. Notably, recycled vinyl, while increasing the life cycle, can still have the same fate. It's also worth noting that Happier Than Ever came in 8 different colored album variants. Records aren't the only move Eilish has made, though. She's worn recycled fashion on red carpets, like a Gucci dress to the Met Gala. She told Billboard, though, that when it comes to things like her merch, she has to pick the lesser of two evils by reducing the number of drops and using materials like recycled cotton. The problem is to make sure that my clothing is being made well and ethically and with good materials and it's very sustainable and that it feels good and is durable. It's going to be more expensive, and that's the thing. People can be upset by that. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.